my fears that we may come short as a result of our own weaknesses. And I don't speak necessarily of physical weaknesses, though tonight I made mention to Brother John that I'd like to have someone up here that was well equipped to hold me up should I stagger a little bit. I don't know why I'm so tired, and when I mentioned it to my wife, she didn't know why I was tired either. But nevertheless, if somebody knows why I'm tired, why, hold it till after the service and we'll talk about it then. Maybe I can find a remedy. But I'm sure that we've come here perhaps in, and I hope, in a very unified measure and desire of knowing the will of God concerning us. It should be our purpose always, we know, that when we come to meetings of this kind, and though we sort of have got in a rut, if that's the proper way to define it, that every time that we come to an evening service, as expected, there's going to be a preaching service. And there's nothing wrong about that whatsoever. But sometimes it's very possible that the will of God might be otherwise. And so if we rely upon that Spirit of God to guide us, we may turn this right into a prayer meeting. And I hope that for the moment, if you have not already done so, that for a moment it will be a prayer meeting, and that you will remember me before our Heavenly Father if you have not already done so. For the message that lays heavily on my heart is the one that disturbs me to have to deliver. And after nearly 150 years of existence under the authority of God that He's given us to represent Him here upon earth as a church, we find that the years have not, we have not proven through the years that we are altogether successful in the purposes that God has restored His authority. And there are things that we must yet learn. And if we would continue in the lethargy of spirit that we have in so often and in great periods of time in recent years, I speak of this because I can remember, and again, someone who is younger might say, well, there he goes again. When he was young, he remembers. Well, that's something that we older folks cannot prevent, because we have lived long enough that we have experienced many, many wonderful things. And it is sad to say that most of us of older years can remember many, many more rejoicing times, knowing full well that God has in store for us as a people under His great, magnificent power to be moved deeply into labor, performing labors for Him that will add souls to His kingdom. Not only to be satisfied with the numbers we have, but to energize our thinking, our thoughts, so enlarged towards advancing the cause of Christ that we will, whatever is necessary to be done, prepare ourselves for that. And so, in a sense, possibly our thoughts are in that line of thought of preparation. I find it highly important that today, and perhaps for some time to come, I don't know how long it's going to take, but for some time to come, it is highly important to you, to all of God's children that have rendered obedience under His authority and obedient to His servant's teachings and to the knowledge that comes to you through the study of His Word. It is important that much be renewed to you, and of that which you already know, to jar our minds in that point of examining just how well these words have affected our lives. And the words possibly that I would emphasize tonight would naturally indicate that we've been away somewhere. For I'm going to bring to you the thought that's contained in the third chapter of Malachi. And by the way, before I go much farther, I'm very confident that that which was spoken this afternoon was but a forerunner of thoughts that had been projected in my mind, and for a moment or two I was very, very much aware that if our brother had continued, he would possibly be saying very similar words that I'm going to talk to you tonight about. For I continue the message that he started, but did not finish. In fact, there isn't a man that God has chosen to represent him that can ever finish any counsel that is given, for there's no end to it. For we are weak mortal creatures. Sometimes we blame our conditions in life on being human. We say, well, that's the human way. That's the human in man. Well, there's no crime in being human, because God created this human being. The only crime, if there is one, is from disobedience. We have expressed in some way or another in our life that makes us somewhat backward in response to those things that perhaps, and I know very well, not just perhaps, but I know positively, that of the moment when counsel was given, we was much enthused by it and stirred by it. But too often we forget and go away and lose the purpose of that teaching. And so my thoughts have been directed in the last, since I got up here. And like I said before, the indication that I'm going to emphasize a particular verse will indicate that we have been somewhere else. For this is the message. I'm going to read that one verse, and then I'm going to go back and start in the beginning of the chapter, the third chapter of Malachi. I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, against the adulterers, and against the false swearers, and against those that oppress the hireling in his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, saith the Lord of hosts. For I am the Lord God, for I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob, are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers, ye are gone away from mine ordinance, and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye said, wherein shall we return? And that, I believe, should be an honest question that we should ask the Lord tonight. And that it be a continued thought with us, not just from the present hour that we're settled here to listen, but that we take it with us in our thoughts and in our heart, and continually ask the Lord, but wherein shall we return? I believe it's an important question that we should examine ourselves in accordance with the question we ask. Wherein shall we return? Some, and perhaps the most of us, do not realize that there's necessity to return, that we've been here right along in the ways of the Lord. But we have not. We've been frustrated down through the last quite number of years. So much so that there's been deviations from the way that we carry on the responsibilities that we've accepted of the Lord to do. Men responsible for this, the responsibility, or rather I should say, for this, greatly lays upon the ministry whom God has chosen to represent him and to deliver the messages to his people. There is a spirit that has come upon the whole of the world. There is a spirit that's come upon not just the world alone. As I thought, in particular, this phrase, that there was a time that God spoke of that he would send a strong delusion. And for years, possibly years, at least for quite a long time, I was of a mind that this only pertained to the worldly churches and those that had known somewhat of God and turned away and became careless. But as this repeatedly came back to me, I began to recognize the fact that we could be very much included in this, that we have been deluded into believing that there's a security to some great degree that causes us to become lax and has allowed the powers that oppose a righteous endeavor to slow us down and keep us in that slow attitude of life. I believe it's necessary that we return. I believe it's necessary that we remember the words of Jeremiah, which I should like to turn to and read words that I believe will give you an idea of what I am talking about. And this is the 6th chapter of Jeremiah. There is one particular verse I want to emphasize, but perhaps I shall back up from this. There was indicated to us today that there were preachers today that were, and not only preachers, but emissaries of governments, various agents of the various governments, high officials of such governments, that were reaching out, and particularly from this nation to other nations. We've been sending ambassadors to different nations, and it is the purpose of most of those ambassadors, if not all, at least there are some who have tried to stress and emphasize the importance of peace and how that peace might be brought about, desiring that nations upon earth would be more at rest. And never in all the history of the world has there been such a complete involvement as there is today of every nation on earth. Involvement in anguish, anxieties that lead to even warfare, of killing even their own kin, when some of their kin have taken an opposite stand. We find in the Holy Land, of all places, you would expect that righteousness would be quite existent, but far from it. And of course, if we understand the scriptures, we know that it was prophesied that certain conditions would prevail in the Holy Lands, and that those that were sworn to the acceptance of Christ as the great Manasseh and the great one to come, and their refusal has caused and allowed enemies to come in and breach a peace that might otherwise have been had. And we find that foreigners have set their foot in the Holy Lands, and the wars possibly are centered right today around and about that nation and going out from there to every nation on earth. You know, there was years and years and years, possibly not more than 10, 15 years ago, Switzerland was the only nation on earth that had never been involved in a war, in a conflict with another nation. And at Geneva, it was a place where those who sought peace, representatives from different nations, would go there, and they would come together and in their conference would come out with some decisions or expressing some hopes that from what they had talked about and expressed would find a place of consideration on the parts of the people of the world. But it hasn't been so. They haven't found that peace. And yet there are those, more those, that are crying peace and peace. There is no peace. Some of the great, they are identified as being great leaders of Christian endeavor today, various denominations that represent themselves to be representatives of God, that are speaking to the people and exciting them, that they get worked up and anxiously follow what he has taught them. But the most of them have left them high and dry after just getting them elevated to a certain way and then leaving them off by themselves. But I cannot identify to you that they are the only ones that have been left high and dry. For we people of the Church of Christ have likewise been found to be in the same condition. I have made constantly and been made more aware as hours pass in my times of concentration upon the conditions of the world and the possible purposes of God with us today. And I find that we too, as a result of the change that has come, and I think of the changes that have been made, and then I think of the statement that I am the Lord God and I change not. And yet changes have come. And we must accept this fact, that if changes have come, it's we who have changed and not God. And therefore it is our desire to try and make us understand that there must be a returning, that we have been away, and we must return to the old paths, wherein is the good way. And though we be old in years, and repeatedly go back and say, I can remember when. I want you to realize that we are sincere, we are honest in describing to you conditions that has been and can be more so now, and will yet be increased beyond the measure of even those of us that have had these great and wonderful experiences. I told you today, those of you who were here, about the visitation of one of the three Nephites to some of our people, young people, when they were left isolated in any condition. I told you about that visit to help you understand that God is very conscious of us, very conscious of our needs and our sorrows. He's conscious of our imperfections and our desires. Down deep in our heart, there is, I believe, in every one of us, a knowledge that we do depart occasionally. And there's much learning that we have yet to acquire, and that we are in need of counsel. We're in need of possibly, maybe not the ministry of the three Nephites, but the like spirit that is given to them to go abroad in the world and reach out to the souls of men. But I find that before we can do that, before we can go out and energize ourselves in going out and reaching to the souls of men that are still searching for the gospel of Jesus Christ, which we have been honored to receive, and to tell likewise its story, but we have not gone in obedience to the instruction that God gave to his servants before he left to return to God above, and there to sit at his right hand to petition for you and I. And I can never forget, and it seems to be more emphasized to me as time goes by, that he left responsibility to all whom he would choose, not only at Jerusalem, during his ministry, in the closing hours before he left and departed this earth, but he left it on down to this generation, to every last man that he is here represented upon earth as his ministers, truly called of God, and identified to them that they were to represent him and to go all the world. And I sometimes find myself possibly letting my own personal anxieties, and I don't mean to say that they are altogether wrong, because I feel that most of them are right, but I'm very anxious about this, that when Christ commissioned his men of old to go into all the world to preach the gospel to every living creature upon earth, those weren't idle words. And when he said to every creature upon earth, did he later on rescind that order? Did he later on change and alter that he said, now don't go to the Negroes in Africa, don't go to the people of India, the Indians in India, don't go here or don't go there, for there are people that I reject? Wherein can you find anything in the scriptures that identifies that God at any time, and in Christ and his teachings, of the desires of God his Father and our Father, that there were certain ones that we were not to go to? Never can we find it. You never shall, and it's never there, and never will be. But we're to go to every nation, kindred, tongue, and people, as we find in the 14th chapter of Revelations, as we find in the 7th chapter of Revelations, As we find in various times, when it is appointed unto us that we're to go to every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. And yet there are those that tell us that there is a people that are rejected of God and we're not to go to them. I can't find it anywhere. And when we allow this spirit to prevail, it gives us an attitude of taking it easy and not energizing ourselves to that very purpose for which Christ himself said, "Go ye out and do that likewise which you have seen me do." Did he reject any that came to him? Did he not go out of his way to reach to the poor and the low of heart, the meek and the lowly? Did he not even reach out to the rich that had much of this world's good and try to identify to them that their riches was not that value which would help them to have eternal life? Did he not stand over Jerusalem and cry and shed tears as you and I? When he said, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, oft I would gather you together as a hen gather her chicks to her wings, but you would not." And because of the compassion that Jesus Christ has for you and I, that same feeling is had for us. And he cries, he weeps, tears. I know that we have not always fully comprehended, possibly, but have turned away or become idle, and thus we have not advanced, and therefore there is something that we have to return to that was one day extant in the church. In the 6th chapter of Jeremiah, in the 16th verse, "Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see and ask for the old paths, where is the good way? And walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein." I would not at any time accuse our people of ever making such a statement. I don't believe there's a one of us that would ever dare or have any such thought prevalent within their mind or heart that would say, "I will not." But nevertheless, by actions and deeds, we have spoken louder than words could ever say, "I will not." And that's a sorrowful thing that we must overcome. And the people, the laity of the church, I must accept, are not totally responsible for the condition that now prevails. It is because of the laxity on the part of the ministry to realize that when Christ sent his servants out into the world, he meant to the world. He did not mean to isolate themselves at home and not prepare themselves in handling their affairs that they could have liberty to go out and declare this great and glorious gospel to the souls of men. But seeing that we have done this, it is his desire now that we, his servants, shall take every opportunity and make ourselves available by preparing our ways of life that we can very frequently give ourselves as a companion to one of the evangelists or the teachers that go out and join them and exercise this part of your authority to represent God as associates in ministering this word to the souls of men. Now, primarily, this message that we have to bear is to our own people to bring strength and confidence to them. We must return to the old ways in this. As we look back, those of us who are older in years know somewhat how missionary efforts was carried on. And I have had my mind so full of the thought of experience that I had when I was in younger years, and I seen the response that was made. I know the power of God that was known among our people when such activities were very much alive and alert and become a part of our life. There were campaigns, evangelistic campaigns. I remember in our town up in Flint, Michigan, that the city bought a large tent. And they bought the equipment to go with it, chairs and a pulpit and material to make a little rostrum. And whenever, very frequently, I wasn't going to say whenever, but very frequently they had three branches of the church in Flint, and one of them would be conscious and aware of their duties and responsibilities to represent God. And so they would send for one of the evangelists of the church, and he would come. And they campaigned in their neighborhood. They sent out literature from door to door. There is no command anywhere in the church or in our laws of the gospel of Jesus Christ that tells us that we are not to go door to door. It has been misinterpreted when it says go not door to door. That means that when the missionary goes to town and there he is to locate and stay in one home, but not pass himself from one home to another. It does not mean one iota in directions to us that tells us that we're not to take the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ from door to door. And when the church was most successful in its endeavors, this was a part of the campaign efforts, that our young people, our middle-aged and our old ones, all joined together and became companions in this effort. And they went from door to door and they gave personal invitations. They passed out literature and announced that we're going to have a series of meetings by one of our elders, one of our evangelists of the church. And the people contributed by attending those services themselves to give the minister the encouragement, because quite often there'd only be a few of outsiders that would come. And yet I can remember when we had this old tent passing around from one part of the city to the other, and the evangelist would begin his series of meetings, and he would bring them the story of how the gospel came about and how Christ came about to establish that gospel, and how that it was foretold way back years and years and years before that the gospel would go over the wall in the medium of people that he would send over the sea. They came to this land, as we know. And many, many things that in our history tells us that the prophets were true, telling us of a day when the gospel would be restored. And we were able to identify to those who would listen that the gospel and its authority had been taken from the earth, and it did not exist upon earth for 1,260 years. How many today actually have heard that message in the last 35, 40 years or more? They don't know of such a message. And we have not been carrying that message to them. And there are those that have, by the power of God, that has moved upon some individual, maybe in France, maybe in the Netherlands or Germany or over in Australia. Various ones have, through a medium which to me is miraculous, which was a medium of activity that was known in the church years ago. And men were moved upon because they've been searching. And God knew that which was in their heart, desire to wanting to know wherein was the good way. And he directed them. We've had, of recent time, men that have come over here to this country. And one in particular, that coming, he met our people. He met our message. He felt that message and was assured that this was the message that God had awakened his heart to want a more and greater enlightenment upon. And he found our people. And the result was that God inspired the heart and mind of men to identify that this man was to be set apart to represent him in the ministry. And he went back to his own country, and there represents us, and there has been good reports come from his activities there. It is not a strange thing that God does reach out here and there and awaken some individual that can be the medium of the beginning of a great work that is a part of our responsibilities. Are we just going to let that man over in Netherlands just go on without any associates, without any further guidance by our ministry and by our missionaries, and no help given to them? Or are we so lax in saying, well, we don't know it's necessary, he can carry on, God will take care of it? But we've had recent experiences, I say recent by saying the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, maybe go back a little farther than that, and say that some missionaries from the church have gone over into the European field and stayed a couple of weeks and felt that the mission was complete. And they baptized a couple of men. And it wasn't more than 6 months before they was back worse than they ever was before. This is not representing the gospel of Jesus Christ to the world. This is not abiding by the commission that was given to our ministers and the ministers back there in the establishment of the church by Christ himself and later in our history. nearly 150 years ago this coming April, that the authority to represent God has been restored, to establish his gospel in the hearts of people. We have fell away from the old path. And we must return. We must return. And it would be well for us, because I believe that I have been spiritually imbued with knowledge, that if we will return in some measure, this manner of which I have revealed to you, that by having tent meetings, by having evangelistic services for 2 and 3 weeks at a time, that they will tell that story to all that are invited and accept that invitation to come and hear. We don't know whether it will be one or two or a dozen. But at least the effort is made, and God is going to respond by giving us guidance and direction, and we'll be encouraged. And when we see our missionaries' activity in such a way, it's going to give them courage, encouragement. And it will override many conditions that have prevailed in last days to disturb us deeply. Many of our people, I have received letters, some that could be very discouraging. Yet, the one letter in particular I received, I know that the man that wrote to me and expressed himself as he did knew better than not to carry out what he had said he felt like doing. Because our people are not fully enlightened as to sometimes things that do happen, they have to assume some things, and by gossip, maybe that's not exactly the word, but by word of mouth here and there, not really knowing the truth of the whole thing, the word gets around that there's been abuse of funds. Well, if that's the condition, I'm not going to send my money down there anymore. They forget that when they have made their pledge to abide by the laws of God, that among the laws that they pledged to accept and reveal was the paying of their tithes and their offerings to support the gospel and advance its cause. They made that petition not to a single man, but they made it to God. And if men misuse and disobey and violate the confidence that we the people have put in them, or the confidence that God has put in them, God has given us the right to select from among our people men to represent us in the handling of finances and various other things. And if they betray that trust, and we're not saying they have, but if they betray that trust, then we have a right to do something about it. And there are people that are home, don't know what's been going on. They have to surmise. And in surmising and supposing, there's not an entire truth revealed to them. And so this one brother that I received a letter from just the other day, a very dedicated person, very dedicated, all of his life. He's a wonderful person. I love him dearly. And he told me in his letter some of the things that he had heard, which discouraged him and made him tell me that I am of the idea and the thought that from now on I will not send any of my tithing down to Independence, but rather I will determine who is out really responding in a missionary effort, and I will support them. I will send my money to them. We know that this is wrong, and he knows it's wrong. But it's nevertheless is an idea that's been projected in the hearts of many of our people today. We must correct that, among other things. We're to return to the old ways, and I have mentioned one that I can identify as a very positive way in which to approach the world in missionary effort, that we shall... I would like to see our local groups get together and say, well, let's call upon Brother so-and-so and ask him if he won't come and speak to this neighborhood and carry on a series of meetings. And we'll support him. We'll back him. We'll be there to support him. And maybe we can gather in some from our neighborhood, which we've not been able to do by the meager efforts we have put forth now. That our priesthood will begin to gather together every place, not just in one local or one other local, but our priesthood will be getting together to study conditions and to examine carefully the scriptures that apply to their responsibilities, and then seek God as to how and what direction they shall go in, and not run before him, but pray and go advisedly under his directions and the admonition of the Spirit that tells us what we must do. But I would suggest to us that we begin now to proselyte, to reach out to the world, to those few people that are left that are still searching for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And we are the ones that have the authority to do it and reveal to them the truths of the fallacies of many of the churches today, when they are only bringing people up so far in the way of religious and Christian endeavor, and there drop them and leave them and expect them to survive. One of the most prominent, if not the most prominent, evangelists of the day, known throughout the world, has gone into many a country, some of them foreign lands and under governments that try their best to subdue and keep the people from going and listening to the man. But he has nevertheless, through the efforts and power that he has, to nevertheless obtain a great stadium and there speak to thousands and thousands upon thousands of people. And then after a period of time, he moves on to another area. There was a news correspondent that followed the man from place to place, and he saw the results of his teaching, that many of them would come forward and profess their will and desire to follow Christ. He only told them a part of what they were to do, to go so far, and then he left them. He didn't tell them that there were still other things that they must do to prove that their heart was right and that they could be proper instruments in the hands of God also. And so this correspondent began to think about that. I wonder what happens to these people after he's left them. And so he had followed the man around for a considerable time, and two or three years later, it might not have been that long, he had already formulated the plan and the idea, and so he went over the same route that this great evangelist had followed, had gone. He went to where the same people were, and he knew many, many of the people that had responded to his teachings, and he found them now derelicts because they had not told them what to do after they got in, so-called. He left them high and dry, and they were worse off after having received the primary word than they ever had been before. And it is our responsibility to go into all the world and give them the whole entire message of the Church of Jesus Christ. Tell them that there is a way which seemeth right unto man, but the ways thereof are death. We must bring to them the glad message of joy and happiness, that there is promise to those who would follow and obey, and that we have been given knowledge of what path that is that they must pursue, and that the Spirit of God will give testimony to those whom we teach, to identify to them that we are not speaking of ourselves, but we're speaking under the command and the directions of Jesus Christ. Ask for the old ways. You can't just start out and say, well, I'm going to go out and find it. You must ask, where is the old way? Because so many, many of our people, we've got several generations now that have come up that have not known the early experiences of the church, where the power of God was felt and experienced and known and encouraged and strengthened our people, and great advances were made in the spiritual endeavor. Not only that, the sicknesses began to leave. And when there were those that did have afflictions, when the elders was called and they laid their hands upon them, they recovered. Not 3 weeks later or 6 months later, but right then immediately under the hands of the elders. This is the way the Spirit of God is meant to work among us as a people today. We must return. We must ask God, as it says here, where is the good way? Ask him, and he will tell us where is the good way, and what manner will our doings be. Shall we do this or shall we do that? And if we have tell ourselves to do it a certain way, and it is not advisable for that to do, we'll know that also. But we, as the ministry, must get ourselves together, study together, examine what it is that God has proposed, that when he called us from out of the world to represent him, what the full chore required us to do. And when we have done that, and then set out on this campaign to reach out into all the world, we have received counsel in years not too far past, and it's a repeated counsel, wherein our young people, primarily it was spoken to the parents, that they were try to encourage their children, that when they grew up to the more mature years of, from the teenage on up, that they were thinking about gaining an education and for what purpose that education would be used. Was it a loan to gather money that would make them independent? Was it for some other purpose? And that our, that the parents were advised through the Spirit of God in a manifestation directing our, the parents of children that they should try and help their children to have a guideline, establish a guideline for them to help them. That that what your education means is basically for the salvation of the Church of Christ. Against the day when that education can be used to help us survive when the enemy encroaches upon us. And that day is not very far off, and that our people have not known too much about that admonition and direction. But they were told that they were to learn to nurses, doctors, blacksmiths, learning the leather trade to make shoes, husbandry, working the farms, working the land, all of these things, that they were to seek these out. And the background of their thinking, or possibly the foreground of their thinking, I should say, was that when they had gained that education, basically, they knew that it would help them to make a livelihood. But it would help the church in the future against the time when we must, to some degree, become isolated from conditions that are going to prevail. We don't know fully how this, what this may be, or how fully this could be carried out, because this has not been done. We don't have a doctor in the church. One says, well, what do we need of a doctor if God's going to take care of us? We've had doctors in the church in the past, and they were wonderful men. Old Brother Luff, for one, that I could mention. That many a time he went at the call of those that had sought for an elder because of their affliction, and knowing yet that he was a doctor, instead of doctoring according to the code, which is the doctor's code, he, by the inspiration of God's almighty power and understanding, was able to prescribe herbs and teas and various things that would help them to recover, and they did recover through that very method and such teachings that old Brother Luff and others of the doctors that of the day that were so inspired. And they got themselves in trouble once in a while with the doctor's organization that is still more organized today now than it was then. But it's right that we should have doctors, we should have those veterinarians. We've got two or three veterinarians in the church, true. We don't have any doctors, medical doctors. We don't have enough registered nurses. We don't have those that are adept in welding. We have some, but we don't have enough. And when they have gained a knowledge of how to weld and use, to weld all kinds of metals, it was to make their livelihood. And basically, it was not with the thought that someday the knowledge of being able to weld would come in handy when we become a people that would have to become independent from the world. And many of the trades today that are beneficial to mankind is not known among our people. And they should be. And our young people should be encouraged, if it's a subsidiary education, aside from the gay education they gain in school, in high school, but to specialize in something that for the particular benefit to the church, for one day it will be needed. But our people haven't received that message. It lays in the pigeonhole at Independence, Missouri. Yes. And that's not the only one. And the people are not to blame for not having this knowledge. But we must now seek of God and ask Him the good way. And I don't suppose those pigeonhole things... Now, I don't mean or intend to infer that it was purposely pigeonholed. But it was just laid on the desk and other things accumulated over the top of it. And the first thing you know, it just disappeared and they don't know what happened to it. But those of us that knew of the admonitions, various ones that came... We cannot remember the words exactly, and so much of it is lost as far as the positive instruction and counsel that we received. But if God gave it once, and He finds in our hearts a desire to know what it was, that message, why it was so important to us that He would speak to us thus, He will again speak to us when He knows that our hearts are right with Him and desires to know of the good way and walk therein. I have jotted down some scriptures because my mind is, my ability to remember is getting weaker all the time, and I have to refer to some of these things that have come to my thoughts. I'm going to refer you to the 28th chapter of Isaiah and read something there that is a strange, very, very strange scripture. And I don't know if it's hardly ever taught or measured to you as counsel. But in the 28th chapter of Isaiah, there's a condition that apparently the people are in, and certain ones have allowed the affairs of the world and various other conditions to make the conditions to make them lax and short in their administration. And so I'm going to read somewhat to bring this down to the point that I'd like to emphasize. In the 20th chapter of Isaiah, judgment, beginning with the 18th verse, "And your covenant with death shall be disannulled, and your agreement with hell shall not stand." This is a wonderful promise made to us of God. "And your and when the overflowing scourge shall pass through, that ye shall be, then ye shall be trodden down by it. From the time that it goes forth, shall take you." Whenever any of you read that scripture and wondered what in the world that meant, it's a peculiar one, isn't it? The bread is too short. In our language, the bread is just too short. And when he lays on it, his feet hang over the end. This may be amusing, but it's not. And when he tries to cover himself, the covers are so narrow that he can't cover himself with it. And there he's chilled in the night. It's not comfort. There's no comfort nor ease. You don't rest. Well, let's look at it in this way. That we have in our way of life today, mainly because we have not, in some extent, to quite an extent, we have been dilatory in pursuing the messages that God has delivered to us through his servants from time to time, and we have been enthused. Why, many a time, I myself and others have spoken under the power of God. We knew we were. And people came to us and they said, "That was a wonderful message, brother." And they praised us to the skies. And it isn't us, it isn't the man that speaks needs the praise. It's the God the Almighty that needs the praise. And that praise is greater than words can express, because the greater identification to God that has been pleasing to you and you accept it as his message, is you prove it by carrying out the counsels that are given. But too often we go away and forget. It's a natural thing that we can't remember all things, but our hearts have been stirred. And I noticed that today, many of our people, when our ministry are preaching, that they are following along with him when he reads scriptures. They have a little notebook and they jot down the scriptures that he cites to them, and maybe a thought that he has presented, that they can return to it and examine it more closely, and thought will become energized in their mind that will help them to understand even more fully and possibly gain knowledge of some deed or some way of life that they, some act in life that they might also do to advance the cause of Christ. But today we have endeavored to lay ourselves upon a bed that was too short for us. And it was uncomfortable. It was not satisfactory. It was not giving the rest that we expected to receive. And that's because we did not accept fully or follow and pursue many of the counsels that we have received in the past. And many of the counsels, as I said before, you are not fully to blame for, because they have been laid idly by and has not been reported to you that this has been a counsel of the Lord. The result has been that there is a great lack of discernment. One of the greatest gifts we need today is to discern, that when our ministers stand before us, that we should know that fully well that it is God that is guiding his thoughts and speaking to us, that whenever a message is born under one of the gifts that he has promised to us, made alive, that we will know truly that it is God that has spoken, or if it's truly a man that has been overly enthused about some particular thing and he's worked upon it till he works upon his thoughts, and he speaks for himself rather than God. He may speak some words of wisdom, and it may be accepted. But when we discern that it was greatly because of the ideals of the man himself, this has happened many a time. and it has not altogether been a great damage to us, but we have more or less accepted things and taken them for granted. Instead of relying upon one of the greatest gifts that God has given to man, when they have accepted his way of life, and that is discerning, having the right to discern. Now, I don't mean necessarily that we, all of us, are going to have the gift of discernment. We will be able to discern. Every one of us has that right to discern the Spirit of God. So I was a young man, and I asked one of the old men that I was very fond of and thought much of his counsels. One day I asked him, how do I know the Spirit of God when it comes upon me? Have I received it and not recognized it? How does it come? He said it comes as a thrill of excitement, of like electricity, sort of. It comes from the head and ushers down through the whole body. And that when those of the elders administer and the power of God is there, it comes upon them and comes right out through their hands upon the individual that receives the blessing. Later on in years, when I was called upon in the responsibility as an elder, I began to know of a truth that this old man had guided me right. That the Spirit of God does come. It comes from our head and it fills us and moves us deeply. Our bosoms burn within us, as was experienced with those two men that walked along the road to Emmaus. And sometimes, one in particular, we had a sister back in Michigan that in her late years of life become sorely afflicted with arthritis. Oh, I never saw a person so crippled up with arthritis in my life. She was bent over and her arms, her elbows was all swelled, her knuckles, her fingers was all spread apart, and her knuckles was all swelled up and she couldn't bend her fingers. And yet that woman endeavored to keep her house in order and do the scrubbing and the dusting and cleaning and doing all that she insisted on doing. And she became so bad that she had to use a chair as a crutch. And they were poor people. And we offered her a crutch one time, and she said, no, that is, I'm going to, rather, if it's the purpose of God that I suffer this, that's the way it'll have to be. But it became so painful one time that she was not able to get out of her bed. And so we began to hold cottage prayer meetings in her home, at least once a week, in which it was of a purpose that she could enjoy meetings of this kind, which we knew that she did. And so her bedroom was off at an angle from the living room where we held our meeting. And on this night, I had gone in to see her and asked her how she felt, and she said she was very, very poorly, and she would like to be administered to tonight. And so we called the meeting to order, and before we even proceeded in only just a short season of prayer, when we arose from that short season of prayer, I was moved upon to speak to the people and tell them that our sister had asked for administration, but I had further been moved upon to go in alone, a most unusual experience. And they accepted it, and they knelt down and prayed while I was in the room with our old sister. And her hands were just all crippled right up. Oh, it was a terrible condition. It made a person cry. I don't care what man there is that can resist that. He could not have resisted that terrible suffering of that sister. And when we come out of the room, she was walking. She was walking by our side. Her fingers were straight. There was no example whatsoever of arthritic condition upon her body. These are experiences that we must know today. I don't mean that our people are going to know every time we gather together such outstanding experiences, but it will be common knowledge, and our young people today will have a personal knowledge that this is the way God moves upon us to keep us solid within his ranks. And that when we come to a time of oppression, when those of another faith or another condition of teaching, professing to be of Christ, when they are not, that we will be able to judge and discern that this is not a man of God and he's not teaching them the ways of God, and they will be able to defend the truth and turn away from that which is false. They need that. They need that testimony that comes through many of these gifts that's promised to us. And so we must all endeavor to seek God in the old way, in which we all know of His presence, can identify that it is the Spirit of God that has brought this about, that we have witnessed so wonderful things. And I don't mean that we're to go back. When I say that we are to go to the old ways, I don't mean that we have to go back and live under conditions that were prevalent at that time. I mean that we must condition our hearts in humility and love and compassion for those who have not yet the knowledge. And even those that, if you would but question yourself a moment, you can know that those, some of our men have testified that there is someone that they have come in contact with in their work that is a man of the world, a crude man, and sometimes even cruel in his language. And yet, he has been able to reach them and been effective. And this must be encouraged, and they must come and they must find those very things. If an artist was to paint a picture, we don't have a picture of a scene like our sister is, and some of our sisters here in the room. I started to say a sister, but we have more than one. In fact, we have three here that are very capable of drawing and painting some beautiful pictures. We saw some of them the other night in our our sister's home when we met there for our young people's graduation afterwards. And I remarked about the pictures. It must be wonderful to have that talent. But supposing that I was to describe to you the story of the gospel of Jesus Christ, what authority meant, what it meant that there would be elders and teachers and priests and deacons and apostles and prophets, what it meant that these must be and are important to be within the church and in full exercise of all their responsibilities, and many other things that we must know are part of the ways of God's working with us. We must know this. We must very much ask of God, where is the good way? And when we have been told where is the good way, it will be like a picture that I will paint to you mentally. I'll paint to you the picture of the restoration of the gospel. How God moved upon certain individuals. And then, after I have painted this picture to you, you go out and try and find that church that I have portrayed to you. And that's one of the things that our evangelists would do. They would begin at the beginning and go down through and show how to strangers that have never heard this message, would tell them how the church was founded, how it was right, that it must be God that calls them, not some theological seminary, but God Himself, and teach them that there were certain officers in the church and why they was there and all of this. And after I have painted that picture to you, and then you go out and try and find that church, you find there's no apostles. There may be elders. There may be bishops, which is not factually an office in the church at all, but is, I'm not going to go into that now. But there are various offices, and you see here is a church, but you see something missing. And you say, well, this can't be it, because the picture that was painted to me, it was not, this church is not like it. And so you begin to search for more. And so it is like an artist to paint the picture of a scene that they have either mentally observed through the means by God, what God does reveal things to us, but that maybe they've seen it on a pretty picture postcard, or maybe they had been out somewhere in the woods and they saw a beautiful scene and they remember that spot. And they went there and they sat down and they painted that picture and put it on canvas. And then, after that picture was painted, you looked at that picture, took in all of its details, examined it very closely, for it had much meaning to you. And then you go out and try and find that spot that our artist found, from which they took that scene and put it on canvas. And you search, and you search. And everywhere you go, you find there's something missing. You may come close to something which looks almost like it, but then there's something missing that is not there. And so you begin to search for the real exact scene that is a duplicate of that picture. And that's what the ministry today is supposed to be doing. They're picturing to the minds of men and upon and that it may be written upon their hearts what the true church is constituted of. And then when they have done so, that they in their search and through the directions that knowing their honest hearts, God will move upon them and direct them to our ways, and we'll be able to reach out to them, and we'll see the great and wonderful experiences that God has been promised to us. And so we have endeavored to lay upon a bed that is too short for us, and the comforts of the gospel that's promised to us is not there. We're thinking of this in the message of Jesus Christ. We have not used it properly, and therefore it doesn't bring us the comfort that we need. The satisfaction that we're doing a good work, or the promise that God has said that he would reveal himself to us, that old men would dream dreams and children and young people will have visions and so on, various ones. Old men can dream, young people can dream, all can have visions, and all ways and means by which God will move upon us to let us know that he is knowledgeable of us and wants us to know that he is watching over us. And so the bed we have made is too short for us, and we have not been comforted. And then when we have tried to cover ourselves, and when some chill, something that has moved us and stirred us, we try to cover ourselves with our accomplishments of the days past and say what we did yesterday or last week or 2 years ago, that is sufficient. We're covered by it. But then when the real test is given and we try to cover ourselves with it by our past achievements, it's not enough. We are chilled, and we are left vacant of many of the things that God has promised to us, and we are not completely covered. That is an interpretation of why the bed is too short, that a man cannot lay upon it, nor the cover is too narrow, that he cannot cover himself with it. We have done that. We must come out from under that condition. We must return to God, and we, in our prayer meetings, and in our homes, and our secret closets, and wherever it's opportunity, that we will talk with God. And I spoke in Phoenix here a short time ago. I got up to bear my testimony, and suddenly I was knowledgeable of something that was rather strange in a way. But and we all knew of a condition, and so I thought to myself, well, it's strange that I speak of this, which we all know. But nevertheless, I did. There is a scripture that says that God, that Christ knows his sheep. He knows their voice. And their sheep know him. Because they've felt him. They've heard him. In the quiet hours of solemn approach to him. In the various attitudes that we do come to Christ. Yes. We speak to him. We speak to God. But we haven't been as responsive in this as we should be. In spite of the fact that we may have opened our day with prayer, closed our day with prayer, sought forgiveness for unknowledgeable sins that we may have committed, we've tried mentally to observe, and sometimes, you know, we let our worldly cares, and going come to the end of our day, we're so tired and so worn out that we just are so glad to get into our bed and hoping that the covers will be wide enough for us and the bed will be long enough, but we go there and just completely forget about the importance of calling upon God and asking him if he might give us rest. And so sometimes this happens, and first thing you know, it's easier to forget night after night. First thing you know, you've got yourself into a condition that you're not talking with God anymore as much as you used to, infrequently. And so, you know, the less frequent he hears our voice, I have tried to illustrate it in this way. The less we pray, the less we talk with God, the less he has knowledge of what our voice sounds like. Now, of course, he knows our voice. Really, he does. But I'm trying to draw a picture to you to illustrate a condition that we've got ourselves into. That the less frequent we approach God and talk to him, the less acquainted with our voice we become. And if God speaks to us and we are not as attentive to it, we may accept it for a moment of time, and then it through our worldly cares and such as that, we lose thought of it. And it hasn't had the effect in our life that it should. We come to church on Sunday feeling it's our duty. We love to be there. We love to meet each other. There isn't a people on earth that's got greater love for each other than the people in the Church of Christ. It's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. And when others have come from other strange places and come into our midst, and they have seen us, they have heard us talk, they have watched us when we address each other and how we talk with each other and how we move out, and I never saw the like of it, they say. It's wonderful. And many have been attracted as a result of that. But when we come to the place where our voice is no longer familiar, and I illustrated the other night, not too long ago, a brother came into our midst that from down in southern Missouri, to his brother Larry Shaw. And as I've explained lots of times, when I'm in church, I don't very often turn around to see what little disturbances. If somebody come in late or something, and I don't turn around to see what it is. That's just a little thing with me, I guess. And anyway, during the meeting, why this brother got up and spoke to us in testimony. And I knew who it was immediately. I knew it was Larry Shaw. And when I immediately recognized his voice, I wondered what in the world Larry was doing up here in Phoenix, living down there in Missouri. But then that went away from my mind. But then I was made aware that here was somebody come in unawares. And when he spoke, I immediately recognized his voice and told the people there that I recognized that Larry Shaw was in our midst. I still hadn't turned around. I knew positively that Larry Shaw was there. And I could say the same thing with hundreds of our people. It has been my privilege to travel from one end of this country to the other and been in their homes, and I've learned what the voice of our people is like. I've learned more than just the voice. I've learned their attitude. I've known of their desires, their ambitions. And one of the most glorious things, I spoke of it in my testimony this morning. My experiences, in spite of many miraculous things I've seen, the most glorious to me is the look that's upon a person that is left isolated and left alone, and then the missionary comes into their home, and oh, how great is their rejoicing. Well, you just can't imagine how great this would be if every home could receive these visits in a constant contact, permanent contact made, very frequent, to keep them alive and make them know that we love them and are conscious and aware that they are here in this isolated condition. Oh, it's a wonderful, wonderful experience to see that look upon our people's faces. To me, that's a most wonderful experience any man could have. I would encourage our young men that even in spite of the fact that they have families started, and it is necessary that we establish a home, and we have to go in debt to purchase a home, and these are things that are common and are natural. But there should be the forward-looking ahead, and trying to arrange your things so that you have not overburdened yourself with debts, unnecessarily so that you could gain time when you could give yourself in some effort in the missionary world, in the missionary effort, and go out with some of the elders or go out with some of the apostles or evangelists, however it may be. We need that help. We need so very much. And we need that help to go among our own people first, that they will have that strength that will be such that they will gain confidence again, absolutely and completely, in their ministry, that God has moved upon them. They will rejoice at seeing it. And they will not only rejoice in expressing themselves of love and compassion, and such are their emotions, but they will give of their goods, they will give of their money, they will give of over in abundance, over and beyond what is actually required of them to support the evangelistic program of the Church of Christ. I know that that is so. I know it will happen. I know it as well as I know I'm standing here before you now. When we have come to the place where our people have been encouraged and have confidence one more time in their ministry, we will move out and we will become a church that is known, become that city set upon a hill whose movements, actions, and deeds cannot be hid. They will know our voice. And they may not accept it completely, but we have responded, we have done our best. We have thought out what is the good way. God has revealed what it is to us. And then we have endeavored to pursue that way. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, was the first scripture I read from the third chapter of Malachi in the seventh verse. Remember that. Return unto me, and I will return unto you. A very definite and positive statement made by God himself to us. All we have to do is carry out our part. And we know, and I'll give you assurance, that he will respond to us. In Isaiah, the second chapter, and then I will close possibly with this thought. From the 7th to the 13th verses, possibly, 12th to 13th verses. Now, let's see. I don't know where to start to read this, really. In the day, beginning the seventh verse, in that day shall he swear, saying, I will not be an healer, for in my house is neither bread nor clothing. Make me not a ruler of the people, for Jerusalem is ruined and Judah is fallen, because their tongue and their doings are against the Lord to provoke the eyes of his glory. The show of their countenance doth witness against them. And they declare their sin as Sodom, that they hide it not. Woe unto such, unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. Say ye to the righteous that it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Woe unto the wicked, it shall be ill with him, for the reward of his hand shall be given to him. For my people are children, as for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the ways of thy paths. The Lord standeth up to plead and standeth to judge the people. The Lord will enter into judgment upon the ancients of his people and the princes thereof, for ye are eaten up by up the vineyard, and the spoil of the poor is in their houses. I had other thoughts that possibly I should have read first to bring this more into my thoughts in the second chapter, rather. Here again it's difficult. Therefore thou hast forsaken thy people, the house of Jacob, because they be replenished from the east, and are soothsayers like the Philistines, and they please themselves as the children of strangers. Their land also is full of silver and gold, neither is there any end to their treasures. Their land is also full of horses, neither is there any end to their chariots. This is an example of that could very well be applied to us, for there is truly no counting of our chariots that we ride around in today, and all these conditions, if we but listen and carefully go home and read them, you'll find that it can be very well applied to us, and possibly it does. For it is after the mountain of the Lord's house has been established. And I mean his government has been thus affirmed and reestablished after that 1260 long years of absence. Their land is full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. And the mean man boweth down, and the great man humbleth himself. Therefore, forgive them not. Enter into the rock, and hide thee in the dust, for fear of the Lord, and for the glory of his majesty. The lofty looks of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. For the day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon every one that is proud and lofty, upon every one that is lifted up, and he shall be brought low, and upon all the cedars of Lebanon that are high and lifted up, and upon the rocks of Bashan. I should skip down to shorten this, and I'll read the 17th verse. And the loftiness of men shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and the Lord also shall be exalted in that day. And this is all a part of the result of teachings of the gospel of Jesus Christ by those who are the missionaries, the evangelists of the church, and everyone, though he be not ordained as such as an evangelist. Every one of us nevertheless has that right to evangelize and to go out and work and spread the gospel. Seek therefore the ways of the Lord and bow yourself down before him. Become humble before him, and he will tell you of the good ways, wherein is the way of truth and encouragement and enlightenment to us all. This may have been a strange message to bear But we are bordering on a time when we are going to have to, we're going to find ourselves where it is necessary for us to get together and counsel together over conditions that prevail. We're going to have to ask each other, what do you think is the best thing to do? And expecting that maybe God has opened our thoughts to understanding of what we should do. And so we counsel with each other. We're going to have to do that more often and learn wherein is the good ways, because we have thus asked of God in earnestness of our heart and in simplicity in our way of life. I hope that you have understood the sincerity of my message tonight. I don't count it as entirely my own message, but these are thoughts that are not only present within me, but within others of those who have been chosen to lead you and help you in your reaching for such a righteous state that you will know possibly that you have a place in the eternal world with God and Jesus Christ. That is the purpose of teaching and instruction and counsel. Weigh it carefully. It does not mean that every word we speak applies to every soul, but some part of it must reach us all. We must examine it and find out what is part that we must know and understand. And may God bless you. I pray that you will be guided and led, and you will understand what we mean when we say, seek for the old ways, wherein there is the good way. May God bless you, my prayer.